Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today is Andy.
Hello, like a normal person.
Duncan.
Hey there.
Jeff.
Hi.
That's all. John's not here. Thank you, Andy. I appreciate you not being a weirdo. But speaking of being a weirdo, Jeff's got feelings about a badminton anime.
Well, I mean, originally I was going to come on here and defend the honor of Batman to John, but he's not with us. He's under the weather. R.I.P., buddy.
Yeah, get well soon, buddy.
Gone but not forgotten.
Who? So, yeah, I've been keeping up with Hanabad, the good, actually, badminton anime of the season. it's so far, it's, you know, it's... I haven't watched like a ton of sports manga sports anime, I should say. Maybe all the things that I like about it are just like things that have been done better elsewhere, but I don't care because this is my reaction, what I feel about it, so I don't give a fuck.
It's new anime journalism.
It's your first sports anime. Let's see if it ticks all the boxes as all the other sports animes do.
I mean, like, my sort of gold standard for sports anime is Ippo. Hajime no Ippo. Boxing anime that's, like, it's very shonen-esque, where it's, like, you know, here's the next opponent. I gotta train. I gotta get the super move. And then,
it's old as fuck. It's 50 years old, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's like 50 or 25 years old. That's the whole Megalobox thing came out. Because it was... Mm.
No, you're thinking of Ashita no Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're right. Apologies. I'm
thinking about apparently there's enough space for two.
No, there's more than two as well. No, Hajime no Ippo came out in 89 and still running at 122 volumes.
Yeah. So yeah, but we're not talking about boxing here. We're talking about badminton. So there's two things that I really like in sports anime. I really like I like in anime in general. It's like, I like the, you know, weird feelings contrasting with like a really sort of out there aesthetic. And I like this sort of trope that you really only get in anime, which is like the, you know, like finding the answer in the heat of battle kind of thing.
The drawn out sort of like quick time moments where people like will think, several minutes worth of thoughts in 2 or 3 seconds, that sort of thing.
More of the thing where like people are driven to like destroy themselves and destroy others in a like a sort of a vain attempt to find out like what is the meaning of life.
Oh,
and it's a thing that comes up a lot in like samurai fiction and stuff like that. It's just something that's like it's so entirely removed from the typical Western mentality that it kind of fascinates me in a lot of ways. And I get the impression, this is just like my own hot theory, that the author of Hanabad was told by his editor, like, hey, you should really check out, since you're doing this sports anime, you should check out this Takehiko Inoue, the author of Slam Dunk. And he did that, but he read Vagabond instead, which is about Miyamoto Musashi and his rival, sort of like their parallel lives that will eventually meet in them facing each other in a way that, like, only one of their stories can really come to a satisfying conclusion at that point. And that's kind of the dramatic arc of this season of Hanabad, because you have your two primary Batman girls, Aragaki and Hanasaki, who, like, both of them are, like, you know, they're sort of, like, destroying themselves and destroying the people around them for the sake of winning badminton, respectively. And there isn't as much of the, like, I gotta train, I gotta level up, and more of it's like, why are we doing this? Like, why is this, you know, why is this something that, like, you know, middle school girls are into? And one of the characters in general, this is, I actually have in my notes, pause for groans from John. She reminds me a lot of Sengoku Nadako from Monogatari. And like maybe
for more groans from John.
We can edit them in after post.
And just like her sort of like internal struggle of like her dealing with her mom. Like her mom is this like sort of like oppressive presence in her life, and she's sort of back on the show, but she isn't like an anime villain. Like, she's sort of like, you know, she sort of fucked off from her life. She adopted another kid who was also like preternaturally good at badminton and like raised her as her like true badminton daughter, who then went to Japan to like face off with Hanasaki. And then instead of that being the like the big rivalry of the show, the stepdaughter was like, this is fucked up. Like, your mom is kind of an asshole. Like, I would have really liked to be friends with you, but Hanasaki, the other girl, like, just flat rejects that and goes like full like Nautico Medusa and just gets like the like glassy senpaku badminton eyes and like just like turns into like a badminton serial killer. And I'm just like, I have no idea where the show is going, and I find that interesting, and I'm into it. I'm excited.
So I have two anime to bring up just as kind of to hear how they relate. First off, the whole like adopting a child who's like a genius at a sport because your kids suck reminds me a lot of March Comes In Like a Lion.
Yeah, that's the other thing that
actually,
really sort of...
I don't know about that, because isn't he... He only gets better at shogi because he's trying to get affirmation from his adopted father. It's not like he was already good at shogi.
I wouldn't say only. And he was already good because his father taught him shogi, and he was already... Before he died, and then he got adopted.
Yeah. So the adopted daughter, Connie, she's like some like Dutch orphan, like badminton phenom, is like she's kind of in the Ray role from Three Lion. Whereas like Ayano Hanasaki, the character on the show, is kind of like if Ray's like sister like kept at shogi and decided to like use shogi to do like destroy the people around her and like
instead
make herself feel better
with abusive men.
Yeah.
What a better time.
And yeah, the, like, and like Three Lion is a better show, but like there's also like kind of the like, you know, using competition as a vector for like self-harm/self-care kind of like is in there. And like it as a show, it's like it's very uneven. Like the aesthetic, it, like if you just like look at the production shots, like all of the rivals that come up, like they look like your typical like anime shonen kind of fare, where like everybody has like wild hair and like has like really weird character design compared to like all the other players who just like basically look like normal people. But that is kind of like wildly contrasted with the content of the show, which is a lot more sort of like a lot more interior.
Mm.
And I know it's an uneven show, but like it feels like it believes in the thing that it's doing, and so like its shortcomings are something I'm willing to forgive it for.
I'm not sure if you were gonna bring this up, Ben, but have you seen Ping Pong, Jeff?
No, I think that's something that's like something that I've always meant to watch, but yeah, like I've never gotten into it, or never got to it, I should say.
It sounds like some of the things you value in Hanabato who also appear in Ping Pong, that it has this, it's the entirety of Ping Pong's focus is not on leveling up, it's on why do I want to be playing this sport? What does it mean to me? What does that mean to who I am and what I do with my life?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds a lot like the show. This is, yeah, like I said, like, there's probably a lot of other things that do this show better, but...
Yeah, it's funny, because I was actually reminded of Shigurui Death Frenzy, which is also about, like, two people, one of whom is, like, the anointed genius, and the other is the person who feels like they're entitled to this mastery over, in this case, the art of, like, a sword dojo in Edo-era Japan. That's actually a kind of a sad thing to bring up, because like it ends at the climactic confrontation and they thought they were going to get a second core and they didn't. So, yeah. one of the few instances of like an anime being canceled midway through, basically. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's very interesting for how it does like have people destroy each other over this perceived ownership of some skill set.
Yeah. The idea of a successor and how, and like this sort of quiet assumption that a successorship tends to pass down through family, but what happens when along comes someone who's just a natural, a genius into that equation, who takes all these bonds of friendship and family and by no fault of their own, but just who they are, breaks them. And just, that does seem to be a theme which, as I think Jeff said, they do return to in martial arts and samurai slash that era stuff, which, as you say, they seem to transpose to sports anime quite a lot as well. There's always the new pupil and the old pupil is something which occurs a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Japanese anime and maybe Japanese cultural works in general are really interested in like the disruptive and transformative effects of genius, where like I feel like someone being a genius or someone being a natural at something comes up way more in anime than it does in any other medium I consume.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Where like, I mean, we're watching a show that's all about like literally commodifying genius for the rich and powerful with demon dolls. So yeah, I do think it's interesting how sports lets you very, in a very kind of populist quotidian way, interact with genius. That just, you have someone, we've all had someone at our school growing up who was just really good at something. They just had the knack for it and didn't really need to be taught. Mm-hmm. And so we all know how it is to like be working hard at something and see someone else surpass us. Mm. And I wonder if it's kind of the more communalist values of East Asian cultures that makes them like think like, oh, here's disruption of the natural order, someone who is a genius at badminton.
It's hard to actually think of a sports anime where there isn't a prodigy.
Yeah, they're either the good guy or the bad guy, or both. Mm-hmm. Like even like Chihiafaru, where what's her name, the main character girl, is like great, but then the main antagonist is someone who doesn't even need to hear the like the poem being said before she can hit on the answer. So she just like can tell from the way that the person breathes in before saying stuff, which is
that's really dumb.
Which is a fucking sports anime thing.
I mean, that was interesting in that they had essentially three geniuses and then one normal guy tagging along, and being slightly upset as his friends grew further and further ahead of him. And sort of, I don't know, that's like a... the normal person out here amongst the...
Yeah. I mean, it's like I played violin from sixth grade until 10th grade. So from the end of elementary school through the middle of high school. And I quit just because like it was getting to the point where like I was just falling so far behind the people who actually were really good at it and practiced it, and it was stopped being fun. And so in classic kid fashion, I quit. And it's funny to see how people react. Not funny. That's horribly cruel to say. It's interesting. Omoshiroi to see.
Don't fucking laugh in a way by saying it in Japanese. Come on. You can't fucking do that.
It's interesting to see how people respond to being like, oh yeah, there's just like a literal fissure between my range of talent and your range of talent. It's not even that if I work really hard, I'll catch up. It's if I work really hard, I'll get to see you perform even higher than me. So yeah, I don't know. I can't believe that Chiafru is going to get a third season.
I'm glad
it's my most anticipated thing now, but I just can't believe it happened.
You can thank the movie for that, I think. The live action movie.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. But still, like, I thought there was going to be years until they'd get enough material to do a full two-core season. But maybe they're just going to do one core. So, anyway, well, speaking of sports stuff, do y'all want to talk about Granblue?
Oh, the best sports anime ever. That's totally
I love how I love its OP because literally, virtually nothing from it has happened in the series so far, and probably never will.
So it's like the Waiting for Godot of sports anime.
The thing I hate about that MV is there's one line which has amore in it, and I fucking hate. There's something really cheesy. Like the opening is this really garish cheesy like summer feel good like song which has like tin can drums and all this kind of stuff, and it works apart from there's one line because in the subs in Amazon Prime they translate the title sequence. There's one line where it's like da 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 amore, and they translate that English bit as to amore, and I'm like, I know that's gonna come up. Because it's not translated, it's just amore in French, and I'm like, every time it makes me cringe a little bit. It's
you don't like people using other languages when they...
It's fine, but it's just when it's so blatant, like, you read it before you hear it, and it's so blatantly, like, just them being like, eh, it's amore, like, it's just to make it rhyme, it's terrible.
I mean... the thing about that OP, though, is that it's set up, it's building... up your expectations so it can then knock them down.
And then the ED in as a juxtaposition is actually what the anime is about, which is about guys getting drunk, getting naked and singing like a karaoke song and then apologizing at the end of it. I love Grand Blue Dreaming. It really makes me laugh. It's like watching a bunch of very horrible people in university get horrifically drunk and then fuck everybody over that they can.
Do you think the show dislikes its cast or not?
I think that they all... I don't know. I don't think that there's any redeeming features to most of the characters. And if, like, the main guy has maybe, like, a redeeming feature and then it gets blown straight away, like, as... He then just fucks over someone else somehow. And admittedly, he might not always know what he's doing because he's young and he's in university and stuff like relationships, romantic and otherwise, is still maybe pretty new to him. But I don't know. I
do think there's like a certain truth to the sort of assholes it makes its characters. Like that.
Totally, yeah.
Like, I think you can have... There's a certain kind of asshole you can be when you're young, which you can't be when you're older, like where it all comes from both naivety and attempts to live up to your perception of how the world should be. It's like, oh, well, of course, everyone goes out and gets drunk and you're...
And then also in some cases, jealousy as well.
Yeah. Just not knowing how to be an adult. And, but honestly,
and it sort of works though, because it's that time. It's not like, because it's set. So this anime, to recap, is about a person who goes to Issei. I think it's in Issei, to go to university, start his university life. And he works at where he lives is his uncle's diving shop called Grand Blue, where he then gets entangled with the diving society. Called Peekaboo. I don't quite know why it's called that. And then he sort of... It's his misadventures and his sort of complete shitting over of like everybody as he gets drunk and tries to be in relationships. Everybody gets jealous because he's the own... It's a very male-centered university. And there's like, I think, five females in the whole of the university. Is that right?
What? I think the way they've set it is it's like kind of a rural coastal place. And you've got a majority of people who either sort of work in or around the sea. And a lot of the women who don't do that have actually just moved to the city.
Yeah, I mean, Issei is pretty much that, actually. Yeah, it's a very coastal town. And I believe it is set in Issei, or close to
there. What do you think's the best episode so far?
I really like the mixing episode, where they're like the butlers, and they don't know what a screwdriver is, so they just get a drink and then put a screwdriver in it. It's really dumb, but it really makes me
laugh. Oh, yeah, that's just literal visual puns. And it does slapstick really well.
It does slapstick really well. I think my favourite one, actually, was, I think, the second episode, when... He's moving in and he's trying to get his room to look the best for like uni life. and his friend comes in and backs it up by putting like...
Yeah, his otaku friend comes in sort of...
His otaku friend comes in, thinks he's into BL, so puts up a load of BL stuff. Then the sister comes in, or his niece cousin comes in, sees it all, gets creeped out, closes the door, and then like he gets like a load of people to try and help him, and it gets progressively worse and worse and worse until he's kicked out to the outhouse.
That's a good example of what it does well. It does... things keep getting progressively more and more absurd as they go along. It's like my sort of like favorite half of an episode was the tennis one. So the scuba diving club has somehow managed to got challenged to playing the tennis club in a match, and the sister, the cousin, and another member of the club are playing against the tennis team, and they're sort of holding their own, and all the men are there cheering them on in the background, and she sort of hits they're doing so well, the tennis team get annoyed and start playing dirty and start hitting body shots, and one of them she sort of dives in front of her friend and blocks the shot and stops her getting hit, and the crowd are like, oh, well done, well done. And you see the two, the MC and his best friend in the crowd going, oh, yeah, she's done really well. She's protecting her friend, protecting her from that body shot. We should cheer her. And he's going, yes. What should we shout? Yes. Nice body.
Yeah, which is a pun because a buddy in diving, you have diving buddies, and so that's where that comes from. And then everybody else, instead of hearing nice buddy, hears nice body. And then all the people come up and be like, oh, here, there's a nice body over here, who are all wasted and like are on top of the courts. And then she gets embarrassed and sort of like freezes up and stops playing. Yeah, that's fantastic. It's sorry like, to overtake that joke.
But it's like, I mean, that whole scene is kind of emblematic of the anime. It's... At times it can be I have trouble telling whether some of the characters are just hideously sexist or if the anime is at times, and there's definitely some homophobia to it as well. And it's like, I can't tell if we're supposed to see the things these characters are doing, and because they are presented as pretty unrepentantly idiotic, see those actions as idiotic, or if we're supposed to find them funny because they're setting it up as a joke rather than the person as a joke, if that makes sense.
But... Yeah. I mean, maybe the best comparison to this show is the British sitcom Bottom.
Bottom's not. I was thinking like, the young ones maybe, but that's...
Yeah, the young ones are better pull, but they aren't horrendously. I mean, they are pretty horrible to each other.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think what gets it away with them is their naivety and their sort of like budding adult life, and I think that also what gets away with them is like just them constantly being pissed, and then like that joie de vivre that people get when they're drunk, like sort of means that they can get away with it a lot of the time. I feel that there is a sort of weird, not good culture with some of their feels like some of the ways that they come up with a solution is to get X drunk or to get Y drunk and then get her into doing this. Like that to me always sort of sits a bit wrong when I watch it, but then the way that then plays out of them purposely, it's because they've got a plan to do something like convince someone to be in a pageant show, and the way that they do it is to be a very horrible person, but then that backfires on them, and that's why it kind of works. It isn't that they try.
I think the thing is like the show starts off with them sort of full of pure intentions, and then successfully getting press ganged into the club by their seniors, and by getting drunk. And after that point, they keep trying to do what has been done to them, and they keep failing miserably, and it keeps coming back to them threefold every single time.
And so, and also just the fact that they do get drunk and they are young adults and they're not in high school, it gives this sort of breath of fresh air to like the comedy genre, like this, the whole thing, that means I like it and accept it more. Do you know, like, just, it's a small change, high school to university, like it's barely even a year or two out, but it's just the fact that it is in a different setting just gives me, like, as a person who watches so many like comedy stuff, like Asobi Asobase, which is, I have to say, probably one of my favorite shows of this season. That is set in a high school. I love it. It's set in a high school, but the fact that Grand Blue Dreaming isn't, it's set in university, just makes me enjoy it for some weird reason a whole lot more. There's maybe because I'm a bit closer to uni than I am high school.
There is something about the first year of uni, which is like, it's like, culturally, it's like people's free shot. It's like you get to do dumb stuff in your first year of uni, and the expectation is it's not going to rebound on you in the same way that in your later years at high school, there's a lot of focus on tests. As the first year of uni, you tend to not be tested that stringently, at least in the UK and anyway.
Yeah.
And so there's like this, it's a space where you can actually finally sort of experiment with what being a young adult actually means, and just without having to worry about exams and just fitting in your old social networks, which have confined your identity up till that point. You go out and you decide who you want to be and what you want to do, and you mess up a lot of the time. And that's, I think, in the end, what I like about this most, is that it's people messing up constantly, and I enjoy that.
Yeah,
it's good. It's people allowed to fail and fail spectacularly.
I agree. I think that's what I really love. I mean, and like, even when sort of their horribleness works, like that episode where they find out that one of their friends has a girlfriend, and then. And then they constantly try, whilst he's in the middle of about to have sex, constantly tries to fuck him over so that he can stay in their club of misery. Like, even then, that kind of me sat a bit awkward, but it made me laugh a couple of times. But it's that final shot of him, like, being able to console, like, his relationship, being able to try to fix it when she runs out, and then he's like, no, 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 I've always loved you since high school, since I was a kid, like... and then him just saying something really horrible. So
they set the whole episode up so that we're supposed to be sympathetic for the bloke they're trying to break up his relationship with his girlfriend, and we're supposed the what goes on throughout is, well, they're doing all these horrible things. What a bunch of assholes they are. I wish they'd just leave him alone. Or wouldn't it be better? And then at the end, as you say, he's finally breaking up with her, and he's saying, oh, but we've been friends since high school. And then he's like, oh, as you say, oh, well, if we are going to break up, could you introduce me to your friends? and she just uppercuts him. And it's like, you deserve that. You deserved everything which happened to you this episode.
Yeah, and then they all catch him. It sort of put the icing on the cake. It, like that. Yeah, it's a great show. I really love this show more than... I think Asobase, if we want to talk about it real quick, is fantastic. And I love that at a high school setting, which is so trope and so overdone, they can still produce new stuff. Mm-hmm. I think is something quite clever and something just ingenious and just... kind of goes to show that there's always an endless well of comedy in high school.
This is something you and Jeff will have to answer, but I saw an article, because I'm not up to date on it at the moment, but I saw an article the other day about Asobi Asobi that said that part of it, what makes it good, is that it is about girls who are given a license to be mean to each other, rather than be nice and expected to do that. This confines of the club they're in just gives them an excuse to be complete shits to each other.
Yeah, that's That's like, I was kind of saying that before the show, like that it has a like the art style looks kind of ugly, but the it's not bad. Like it has a very sort of like sketchy, cheap look to it.
It's like sketchy watercolor pencils.
But I
quite dig.
But I also just I really like the fact that a lot of times like their intentions for in a lot of the situations that they're in are not pure, and you know, despite themselves, they will like the one with the twin tails who is constantly like, you know, she's like the smart, hardworking one who just has like, you know, no social life above and beyond like this little like pastimers club.
Yeah.
She is, you know, working herself to death, and you know, kind of like we were talking about also in Hanabad, you know, she, you know, finds out that she's like second, you know, in terms of grades in her class, and then her boyfriend, you know, and then like her rival like was just like spent the whole time like hanging out with her boyfriend and wasn't studying, and she's just like coming apart at the seams, like, I want a social life, I want her to die, I hate everything here.
Yeah, I think her name is Hanako. She's very good. It's the faces, the reaction of the faces as well, because you've got this very beautifully drawn art style, and then they just intersperse it with really ugly reaction faces that just really makes me laugh.
Like when Hanako is depressed, like her face is just smeared across the table like a Dali painting.
Yeah, but Unlike Grand Blue Dreaming, there's more moments of redemption between the girls that make them actually a concrete friendship, as opposed to just complete monsters.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sort of like the bit where they talk about how smelly Olivia's armpits are, and then they're just like, it's okay, we've gotten used to how smelly they are. I mean, we'll talk about it maybe later, but I goddamn love that show. It's fantastic.
Yeah, when it's done, when I'm caught up, I want to talk about it again.
And just the surrealism beyond, like, stuff that I know.
Yeah, they'll see something with a joke in, like, just kind of like an absurdist joke, and then later on they'll bring it back. It's like, no, actually, that's a real thing. Like,
and then they'll add layers to it as well. Yeah. Like, layers and layers that then don't. Either don't get explained or just add to the confusion. It's really, really good. But yeah, I don't know. Do we want to chat about some Lupin as well, real quick?
We can do. We can just briefly talk about what we're both of us finding interesting about the current arc. So it's returned to its high tech hijinks in the last couple of episodes. Tying up its arc surrounding its Google/Apple like company Shake Hands and its weird plans for global domination or not, as the case may be. Where are you with this, Andy?
I am actually, I think, completely up to date, and this one's come out in the last couple of days. The last one I watched was, I think, the second episode of the most recent arc.
Yeah.
The one after, well, the really great, I think this is what I really love about this season in particular. They had a really beautiful episode of Goemon. That was the last one I watched. And they had this really beautiful thing of, like, Goemon's, and as well as Jigen's as well, Goemon's friendship with Lupin. What Lupin means to him, what he means to Lupin. And it's like a basic thing, but for a show that is, sort of like, so not trope, because I think it might be one of the things that started off like the whole trope of this sort of genre, but like something that you just instantly like watch it for and you just get it. You don't need an explanation of their character. You don't need an explanation of their past. You just understand them. To have that sort of introversion and introspection into their lives and to their friendship.
As I've said before, to me, Lupin is very comfortable in its own skin. It's a show which has been running so long, and the actors working as the characters so long, that everyone just slips into their roles just very easily and can pull off the basics at a level which is just higher than everything else. So it's just running at a higher baseline than most shows. And so it doesn't have to have an amazing... it can do the mundane really well. It can have just a filler episode, which is still great fun just because everyone is so on point. And it's like, even this episode, which is about Goemon, where he does exactly what Jeff was talking about earlier. It's like, I've got to find out if Lupin doesn't see me as a threat. He just sees me as a friend or just another part of his posse who's carrying around with him. Does that make my existence as a warrior not worthwhile? And it's like, okay, the only way I can find out how Lupin actually thinks about me is to fight him. And so they do exactly what this idea of finding out their existence through fighting. And for once... Lupin, this series, I'm not sure if it happened as much in previous series, but he's got fairly nastily wounded at least twice this series. He's got shot in the gut and he's got sliced across the chest and put out of action for good chunks of time both times. So it's quite interesting to see them not very precious about the character either. It's like a lot of times shows won't have their main character horribly injured.
I mean, it's more that, like, for Lupin, the joy isn't the their characters are incredible, but the joy isn't so much in their character, but the heist and how they pull it off. And then, so when they perform so when they then do these character interactions and stuff where Lupin does get damaged, because you don't see Lupin as kind of a person in some cases, you see him as sort of like an entity, like an enigma. Like, he's always going to save the day, he's always going to be there, he's always going to be able to pull off the thing that he's going to do. It's just how he does it. And the fact that he didn't, the fact that Goemon cut him down, and even Goemon didn't realize that he was going to do it, and the way that they did it is like, it was so beautiful, because it incorporated both the old art style that, like, from the, like, the first and second seasons, and the new start style that's been coming on for this third and fourth, which I love, and how he's cutting his old art style, his old version, his older him.
Yeah, that was really lovely.
That turned into Lupin. That was really, really well done. And the whole season has been incorporating old Lupin in a really lovely way, like, as sort of like, even more than just sort of what I thought it would be, which was so far just like weird interstitials of like, here's what Lupin's been doing all this time for ages.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they used that art style in a way that was more meaningful than just flashbacks to old scenes was really good.
How they used the different colours of the jackets as sort of signifiers for the tone of an episode has been really good. It's like, he's wearing the pink jacket, so this is just going to be a comedy episode. And
but it's always good. And I don't know, like, what your feeling is of Fujiko this season. I don't know if we've talked about him.
I mean, I not long ago rewatched the woman called Fujiko Mine, and so I'm sort of I enjoy her a lot. She's a great character, and they seem to be sort of, they started out this series with them sort of estranged, and they seem to be coming back. It's like they I think they're if they had. Well, appropriately enough, if they had a Facebook profile, it would say it's complicated, because as this current series has gone on, one of the things which happened in the last episode is that this new incredibly powerful Google/Facebook service has this feature where you ask it a question about someone, and using its all its data it has on them, it will give you a rating on how true that statement is. So, like, one of the examples they gave was, does Lupin consider Goemon his friend? And it gives him, oh yeah, B+, that's fairly true. And it's like, what's been going on with them is that Fujiko seems to want some sort of clarity, finally, and Lupin still doesn't seem to be able to provide that, or just realizes if he did, that what makes their relationship interesting anyway would fall apart. And
yeah, it's that sort
I
of
think
always wanting to chase.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's famously what kills any good on-screen couple in TV. It's like the moment the relationship stops being about the pursuit and becomes a set one is the moment that that couple dies on screen. Not literally, but metaphorically. And,
yeah,
like, I think part of what's this current arc is about is this idea that you don't necessarily want absolute certainty about anything, that life is found in the sort of living the moment rather than being certain about it, that instead of like being preoccupied of is this person, like, what is the reality of them, just accept what you find in the moment and just be happy with that. And I like in the recent episode that it's like we've had this like villain in the background. I almost use air quotes villain because he's been sort of set up as, oh, he's the evil mastermind behind this technology which is linking all the plots throughout this series. And we expect to find him as like this cackling megalomaniacal person. But what seems to be set up is that all the people around him do, and possibly even, and even him, so far as we can tell ourselves, he very much doesn't see himself as a villain, and he's just, it's like the famous Google motto, do no harm. He just thinks he's making the world a better place by giving people all this absolute information on everyone that...
Do no harm is the Hippocratic Oath, Duncan. Don't be evil is the former Google slogan.
Well, anyway, no one has anything to hide, and so no harm will be done. Doesn't matter if mob justice starts coming because he's revealing all this information about people. It's like, to him, technology is inherently good, and that nothing it can do can produce a bad result. And like that's a fascinatingly spot on look at how big technology companies tend to see what they do, or at least tend to rationalize what they do. And to have this character who they center it around just being this person totally unaware of the harm he's doing to people and just utterly convinced of his own moral self-righteousness is just great. And the bit we found at the... the hacker girl who has been introduced this series, Amy. Yeah, right, she would say Amy, not Amy, and get very annoyed about it as well. But... it turns out that the twist in the tale is that she's his daughter, and
long lost daughter.
Yeah, and I mean, if any of you guys know much about the Steve Jobs and his he famously had a estranged daughter who he refused to acknowledge for years, and like part of this Masonic idea which builds up around company founders and how they can't see their own mistakes, either personal or public.
Yeah, they can't see their own shortcomings as anything other than like part of the recipe of their success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how they've got so much infrastructure built around them to facilitate them just doing what they want to do. And so many yes men to facilitate that they're just allowed to live their worst excesses on a world stage. And it's like, so we've got this what, how many series has Lupin been running for? Like, this reboot's been going for about 7-8 years, and the whole series has been going for a good 30.
The first Lupin's in 1967, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's like one of the... What's... I don't know if it's remarkable or not, but that we've got these characters, like, a good half century old, talking, doing some of the more most relevant cultural commentary you'll see in anime at the moment, and some of the most grounded as well, strangely enough, is really fascinating to me. And it's I love it for it. It's just been a joy to watch this season, and really smart as well.
Yeah, and I totally agree. It's been an absolute joy. And also, I just put it out, the background noise, the background soundtrack has been absolutely beautiful.
Throughout. Yeah, it's had
good. Like these real beautiful, like, jazz undertones that have been creeping in, and like the perfect hit of the music that hits just as the chase is about to start. All that kind of stuff is just absolutely, like, wonderful, and adds just another layer of, like, appreciation onto a show that is already doing so many things so right. Like any episode with Zenigata always makes me very happy.
Yeah,
like,
he's good
with him as a center. Like it's very good. I really do love what Lupin is doing, and it makes me want to go back and watch the older Lupin, because I've never really watched it, but I also don't know whether I ever really need to. In many ways, this Lupin feels like sort of the way that South Park changed between, what was it, like season 10 and 11, where they stopped doing like one episode in like things where nothing really mattered and start doing stuff that sort of affected each other as it continues. Like, it's beautiful.
I get what you're saying in there, that it does make me want to go back and find out more about these characters, but I'm not sure if I can, like, bring myself to watch 50 years of Lupin, a couple of hundred episodes or something.
It takes a feel that I had looking at the precipice of, like, Gundam stuff, where I'm just like, oh, I bet Jeff has that feeling too, of like, I could watch all of this and I probably wouldn't enjoy every bit of it, but it would be nice to have the full context for a franchise or character.
And then when they start calling that like Gundam franchises, like the Gundam Universe franchise, and you've not like got different arcs, but you've got different years and sagas, and then it's like, well, this arc is actually set in the blah blah blah, like UC Go 2 arc 2.3, and you're just like, okay, I don't really care, but I'm glad that you've pointed it out to me.
I think one thing which keeps Lupin good is that it has really well-paced arcs within its seasons. And so even though not much necessarily progresses in the characters, something's always happening. It's always busy. There's always great dialogue, great little bursts of action, keeping things interesting. It's never a point where I'm thinking, well, another X number of episodes, maybe something will get interesting. It's like it's the exact polar opposite of Frank's last season. It's Frank was constantly teasing us with, well, maybe next episode will get good, maybe, or in this episode will be good, and then we'll go back to being trash again.
We'll roll back all those things that you liked, and because we don't want to move too fast.
And now it's time for Bridezilla.
I think that's just because Lupin, as a concept, as the characters, it's just so spot on and perfect that, like,
I mean Franks was borrowing a lot of influences that Lupin is the influence.
It could have easily have ended up like Franks did it, that it's building on this old set of influences, but Franks just doesn't seem to learn any of the lessons of what has come from before. And instead of taking that foundation, saying, okay, people are comfortable with these concepts, we can build upon this and we can do something interesting, it just like, wow, aren't these great concepts? I bet you've never seen this concept before, except in this other thing, which did it exactly the same.
But that one was really good, so this is good
too. Actually, it was just a homage. You don't really appreciate it.
I'm
loving it. It's good, good, good stuff. Also, funny the fact that Persona 5, the animation, is coming out, which you play or watch that game / anime, and you're like, yeah, this is just Lupin the game. But anyway, moving on, I guess.
Well, So this episode has had the shadow of John not being here cast over it, and I'm going to invoke that again because I promised John that I would watch all of Space Brothers, which I've been watching very slowly for the past 3 months. I said I was at episode 40 or something, and I was like, I'm going to watch all of it in the next 2 weeks, and then we'll talk about the whole thing all in one go, and I failed. I only got to episode 54, which granted is 14 episodes, which isn't bad in 2 weeks. Especially if you're as weirdly slow paced and like anodyne as Space Brothers is.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it week by week, and even then I gave up. And as soon as it got like 3 or 4 episodes deep, I was like, I'm not gonna fucking bother. They're stuck in a desert doing recaps again. Like,
you guys, as far as I did then. That's yeah, episode they have 3 recaps in a row for episodes 52, 53, and 54. And man, that is not welcome. Especially because they do the recap thing of like, they very detailedly recap like stuff that literally happened like 4 episodes ago. And it's like, I don't know. It was the beginning of the second season, which, as John is always quick to point out, the first season aired in a shonen slot, and the second season aired in a seinen slot. And from looking ahead at the episode descriptions, the show gets a lot more like serious, which is good because the stakes for the first half of the season are, except at the very end, they are Muta, the older brother, who's kind of a hothead and a fuck up, may not get to be an astronaut, which on the one hand, like, sure. On the other hand, it's called Space Brothers. Not Space Brother.
I do kind of like that the way they were drawn is almost like the opposite that you'd expect them. Like the short haired Ed guy is just like the really responsible. He looks like a jock, but he's like this really.
He's got this chestnut hairstyle with like the weird kind of point / faux hawk thing.
But he's like really responsible, diligent, and hardworking from what I remember, as the older brother's like this big afro head, it's strange, as you say, like quirky person. And it's like, I guess for me, the first 12-13 episodes I watched of it was just waiting for it to be Planetes, and it never became that. And maybe
apparently Hibito begins to struggle with PTSD from his getting marooned on the moon in like the late 60s early 70s, but that's again 60 or 70 episodes to watch before. I don't know, it just, there feels like there's an implicit problem where, so this belongs to the very small subgenre of space anime where two people make a promise to go to space and then they go to space. And the other big entry in this is Moonlight Mile, which is terrible, which is two guys are hiking Mount Everest, and they're like, man, space looks really close here. We should go to space. And like, okay. And one of them like joins NASA and the other joins the Air Force, which has a secret space force, which already has like a base in the moon. It also breaks off really abruptly, like right as there's going to be a war between like NASA and like the secret shadow military presence on the moon. But this just like, the fact that we spend 50 episodes just going through literally every stage from sending in a paper application to being put on a rocket in terms of becoming an astronaut, there's no like narrative foreshortening, no skipping ahead. We just go through everything. And Muta is not a very exciting character because he is kind of quirky and eccentric, but overall he's very smart and competent, and he never failed.
Save that person's life in that diner, remember? That was amazing.
But that was an accident because he tripped over a dog, but then didn't tell people. That fucking dog, too. Anyway.
That gif of him like looking at the space rocket and then all his jowls like flapping, that's like the single best thing of that whole show.
I mean, it's well animated, and like it is getting more exciting because there is like an incident where because neither astronaut is watching the area in front of the space rover, they drive into like a huge hidden crater, and they both get their suits damaged, and they have to get rescued. But that was good, but like also, it's called Space Brothers, and your brother's not in space. Like at some point, they're going to be on a space station together, being brothers in space, and I feel it's just like a massive spoiler by title that I just, it moves so slow and it's so eager for you to like appreciate how complicated being in space is. And that's not why I watch space shows, because I already know how complicated it is and I want some spectacle. There's no spectacle in this besides the animation being nice. Yeah.
I mean, but even then, like, the things that they're animating isn't anything particularly deep or interesting. It's not like interesting directorial shots. It's just them walking and doing shit that it's like animating normal everyday life. It's not like, I don't know, like, it's, I think, and I did give up on episode 86.
Wow, why didn't you just finish it at that point?
Because, I'll tell you for why, I just stopped giving a fuck. Like, I stopped giving a fuck about Mutter, I stopped giving a fuck about Hibito, and I just think, at the end, they're going to be in space, or they're not. I don't really, honestly,
precisely.
Care.
No, yeah, that's, that's 100%, you are totally right. But yeah, either they're going to be in space, or they're not going to be in space. Chances are they're going to be in space.
I personally enjoyed the technical aspect and him sort of going through the procedures. In many ways, it reminded me of like playing Kerbal Space Program, but without any of the space, with him just sort of like walking in a tank of water, being like, this is almost like space. Apart from it's not. I'm in a fucking tank of water in a spacesuit. And he's just like, okay, great. Like,
I mean, I would be behind it if like, they were trying to show that it sounds cool to be an astronaut, but actually like training to be an astronaut is really boring. But then they think it's fucking baller, like walking in a tank full of water and having to like listen to all these lectures and memorize all these facts and shit. I don't know.
I'm sort of reconsidering my framing of what this show is trying to be. That I obviously my go-to reference, as I said, was Planet Earth, which. I think we've talked about how the fact that starts in space,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that they're already up there, and that means that it has this license to just go and experiment with the setting and not worry about the procedure of going and becoming a astronaut. That's the wrong thing to be thinking about. What I perhaps should be thinking of it as is a bad version of A Place Further Than the Universe. That it's
I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to that.
I keep forgetting. You I honestly think you would have as I think we all said, is that ended up being a really good show.
And how when you like pet a cat and they seem to be really enjoying it, and then you like give them one more pet and they bite you. That's how I am about people talking about like anything. Like, I'm interested in it, and then you guys keep talking about it. I'm like, fuck this show, I'm so tired of hearing about it. I don't care if it's good or not.
Recently bite you, Ben.
But then you'll come back in like 3 months' time and be like, guys, have you heard about this?
No,
show?
I'll come back
really
in
good.
Like 4 years' time and be like, hey guys.
I should
hey guys,
say
guess what I just
thing,
watched?
The other thing that put me off the anime. Is that so? It ends on episode 99, mm-hmm. Which ended in 2014. Mm-hmm. The manga is still ongoing, so I don't know how it can. and that started in 2007. Like, so it's still ongoing, and I just can't like. And as soon as I saw that the anime ended, and I'm just like, okay, wherever it's going to end, it's going to either be an anime original ending, or it's just going to end on a nothing.
I mean, right. The last episode is titled Life Changes, Promises Don't, which is actually a pretty great pun in, or like play on words in English, but I don't even know if it works in Japanese. So obviously it's going to be like, and their adventure continues ending. I mean, it's whatever. Like, yeah. I'm not hating it. It's just like currently like a 6 out of 10. There's like a love interest who they think they're being so like subtle about how Muta's huge crush on messy doctor girl Sarika-san is like oh, does she like him back? And I mean, honestly, at this point she doesn't. All she thinks about is food. It's all she thinks about is food, with a brief interval to think about her dead dad, but mostly food.
It's really weird because they all feel completely sexless. Like, I can't imagine any of them being in a relationship. I can't imagine him going on a date. Like, he's like a Mr. Bean character.
It's not, although I mean, it's that's why I say when it's like very shonen, like he doesn't have like real problems. He has like goofy anime like kids show problems.
He has real first world. His first world problem is that he maybe can't get into space, but hey, he's in the 20 people who are more likely to get into space than the rest of the 6 million people on this planet.
Well, it's funny because it's what I just stopped with now is there's the trainer who's like this like really monotone guy in glasses and blonde hair, like a Duncan, have you listened to this week's Quarter to Three podcast yet?
Oh, you know how
they talk about like STEM, like how Kelly Wand uses STEM's voice. Hello. Where it's like, I don't know about saying that. So he just talks like that. He's got this really like bland, his voice is bland. He's got a matter of fact voice, but he's like, I have lots of experience in the military. Military people are the only people who are qualified to be in space. Muta is related to Hibito. He looks like an idiot. I'm going to be really hard on him because he's not in the military and he's going to flunk out because that's my job as a trainer. And it's just like, and the other trainer's like, that's kind of messed up. Oh, well, I'm going to run my module how I want to run it. And like, it's just like, is this your antagonist? Is a guy who's like, dogs can't play basketball. I'm looking forward to people like actually having problems and experiencing setbacks, but right now it's so bland, so anodyne. So
the people who are having setbacks, the people who don't do it, they never get revisited. They just get dropped by the wayside.
Oh yeah, the old guy who's like, I know I'm too old to be an astronaut, but like I always thought I would try, and he didn't get to be an astronaut, and he's like, let's go have a drink, and then he's like, I'm glad you guys are going to space. I'm too old to go to space anyway, and he just disappears from the anime for the rest of the show.
It's been a long time since I watched this, so I'll ask you and Andy in case you can enlighten
me. It's been a
while
since I've watched.
Yeah, Andy's just talking out of spite.
Is the essential emotional thing pulling them along? Like, obviously, that I referenced A Place Further Than the Universe because it has this central emotional story about someone going to find out what happened to their mother as like the emotional hook dragging everything along. Is there any sort of emotional hook dragging it along other than someone vaguely wanting to go into space?
The only emotional hook is him jerking over his brother and jealous of that.
No, they saw a UFO when they were little ones. They want to go to space to see UFO.
Oh yeah,
is it them childhood promises?
Yep. Childhood promises. Well, that's why I said like people just like make up weird promise to go to space. Like in what's her face, the girl character in Planet Taste, doesn't she make like a childhood promise to go to space? I think so. Anyway, also the bland blonde guy is named Vincent Bold, which is. fucking ace to steal a march from Andy. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to keep watching it. I'm excited to be done with it, but I also am excited to see, like, it does grow a backbone and, like, punish the characters and stuff.
Because,
like, everyone.
You have been told, and so you hope.
It won't. It's, like, just not that anime. It's not that. It never gave across that sort of atmosphere of, like, him being punished or them even really wanting to punish him.
Hibito gets PTSD later, doesn't he?
I mean, maybe. If he does, I completely fucking forgot, because it happens maybe like 3 episodes and it's not even done in like...
Sarika gets ALS?
So what like, you're saying, Andy, is it's like My Hero Academia where his arm gets broken and there's no consequences.
Shadow of John again. One last thing.
I just wanted to say, like, if that stuff does happen, I'm not saying it doesn't, it never does it with an emotional heft that made me remember it. And I have to admit, it's been since it finished airing, so what, like 8 years maybe? Like since I've
watched
it.
8 years?
4 years. 4 years. Apologies. Yeah. Apologies, 4 years, I can't math. But yeah, it gave me no emotional heft apart from, yeah, I kind of enjoyed that. Like, I'm not surprised that you're bored with it, because even when I watched it, we sort of fell off the train. So good on you for sticking on through. And fuck me, that desert takes forever. Anyway.
First off, astronaut canets are called ASCANs, and I refuse to believe that's what they actually call them in real life. And second, this is the I was looking up the director to like see like, oh, is this guy just like a jobber or something? He's the director of most of the recent Doraemon movies, but to again reference the dear departed John, he directed Gurazeni, And also, Duncan, he directed After the Rain. And that one actually does have like a lot of really striking stylistic things. So I wonder if this was just like either he's grown a lot in 4 years or he had a mandate to like make this boring and accessible, like square mid-range body shots for everybody.
I should say that Space Brothers did. It's not like you say second season. It just aired continuously.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
didn't take a break for those 99 weeks.
No, but like it's called in like the production notes, they call it like second season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, so the fact that it's doing recap episodes is in my head purely because I caught up with the manga, and they were just like, "Well, shit, we've got to wait a few weeks for that to catch up," which is a very shonen thing to do. It happens in Naruto and One Piece and all the other crap ones all the time.
Yeah, One Piece is crap. Anyway, let's take a break and then come back for spotlight pitches.
Let's just see. I've disappeared down the rabbit hole of looking at his past credits. It's because you said that.
It's a weird list of things he's done.
It seems like he really likes baseball because he's done three different baseball series.
Yeah, I can't believe that he directed Major Second and Gurazani the same season. Wouldn't you just like bring the wrong folder to work at some point? I feel like you'd eventually just be like, okay, guys, ready to do the next episode of Major Second. Like, oh, this is the Gurazani studio. And you're like, shit. recap episode.
And he's got like a kid's baseball show as well. Danchi Tomo.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He also did Nazo no Kanajo X. Fuck me.
Is that a good one? Is that a Mysterious Girlfriend?
Mysterious Girlfriend X.
That's good. Like, that's a good show.
Yeah, I like that show a lot. I thought that was for its like odd, like for a weird like perverted hook. It was an interesting one. And the art style was enjoyably retro.
Yeah, it's a weird... So, Mysterious Girlfriend X is about a guy who meets a girl. It's this girl who sleeps on her desk every day, and she, like, keeps a pair of scissors in her panties, and, like, she falls in love with this guy because he tastes a bit of her drool, and that, like, gives him this, like, psychic bond. And
well, doesn't he then need to live on her drool?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're like bonded together because he needs her drool to survive. And so she's like, okay, we're boyfriend and girlfriend now. It's really weird, but like different. And yeah, the art style looks like it's from like 1988. Yeah. So
yeah.
And also, watch that anime, Duncan, and then you can come back and tell us about it.
Like I was just scrolling down, looking at the previews, and I was like, this must be one of his oldest ones. Scroll down a little further, 2012.
Yeah. Also, it was kind of hot in a weird way. You're just like, yeah.
Wait, okay. It sounds like you're making Jeff come hither sounds at this point. It was weird, but kind of hot.
Hey,
it looks kind of problematic, but it's actually
it's not
good
at all.
Girl with scissors, you say?
About right now. Go to hell.
Oh man, yeah, girl's hiding office supplies in her body. Yeah. I should rewatch Mysterious Girlfriend X. Let's see if there's subs for it. And this is old enough that Gotwoot subbed it. And AS and ACX, it's all these old groups. 2012 was a long time ago. And we're back. For the second half of this podcast, we will be doing spotlight pitches to Duncan, who pitched our last anime that we watched in this corner of the world. What seems like several months ago, because it was several months ago. I'm going to start first because I have a divine right to do so. This was actually difficult. I knew I wanted to pitch something cyberpunk because I'm starting a game of The Sprawl, a Powered by the Apocalypse cyberpunk pen and paper role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And so I first started out seeing if there was some way that we could watch Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. And I thought about lifting out a series of episodes, and I didn't like that. And I thought about watching the recap movies, which are Ghost in the Shell, Laughing Man, and Ghost in the Shell, Individual 11. And I remember those are actually bad and cut out like a lot of the good stuff in the show. So I thought about, well, what about something that's Ghost in the Shell adjacent, and maybe we can watch the original Pat Labor OVAs. And then I thought, we've already done a Pat Labor thing, and like I think we'd be good to drill down, but... And so I thought, oh, Bubblegum Crisis, because Duncan was kind of watching Dirty Pair when I was watching Bubblegum Crisis, and there seemed to be a lot of crossover interest there, but I didn't feel like it. But I remembered that Bubblegum Crisis has a lot of spinoffs. For instance, it has AD Police, about the people who are so bad at their jobs killing cyborg, berserk cyborgs, that they have to have the Night Sabers come and rescue them. But actually, the AD Police OVAs in the TV show are pretty bad. But there's one more thing. There is a prequel OVA called Parasite Dolls, directed by Nakazawa Kazuto from 2003. That director is the same guy who did the OP planning and direction for Record of Lotus War Chronicles of the Heroic Knight, my favorite anime OP of all time. And I remember this watching the show back in, I guess, like the end of college. It's a prequel about like the AD Police before before the Night Sabers come and rescue them, and it's done very much in the mold of a schlocky noir, where the secret unit of AD Police known as Branch is hunting down people who are secretly boomers, which are humanoid robots, and so Buzz has to partner with a boomer to hunt down these illegal creatures. And it's kind of a series of very noirish vignettes where, you know, the detective realizes that he's the one who committed the murder, or someone has a repeated dream that ends up coming true in the most ironic and bloody way. And overall, it's kind of just like Blade Runner, but with a lot more TNA and blood, because it's an OVA from the early 2000s. And it's available on Crunchyroll and on, no, just on Crunchyroll. And there's a DVD. If you want to pay $5, you can just buy a DVD of it. Which, I don't know, it's very beautifully animated, and it's kind of chitty and trashy, but also maybe not. It could either be a Fist of the North Star or a Read or Die in terms of how it prompts us to talk about stuff. So
also,
that's what
also
I'm
just double check. This is 3 episodes of 30 minutes.
That's correct.
Okay, yeah.
So it also falls under Andy's short criteria.
So, yeah, I'm just looking at the promo images for this now. It does look like, as you say, like definitely going for the edgier side of the cyborgs, like enjoying the entire human and outside with robot inside means we can do ridiculously violent things to these people.
Yeah.
And say mm-hmm. we're just doing it to robots angle.
Yeah, it's not it's definitely something that's to be enjoyed more for aesthetic than for story, but I do think it's a fun watch, and it goes back to a time when like these OVAs were everywhere, and you could always just, you know, go rent something weird from your local Blockbuster and watch someone explode in a pile of blood or oil or something. Yeah.
Oh, the good old days.
Yep. Yeah. Way back when.
All right. Well, I'll jump into my pitch then. When Duncan initially said cyberpunk, I don't know a lot of cyberpunk, and the first thing I instantly jumped to was Interstellar 5555, the five story of the secret star system. But then I thought that was too obvious a pick for me to have the Daft Punk anime, which is like kind of beloved. I don't know, I've never seen it. But I'm going to instead choose a musical, because I know what you all love musicals, don't we, guys?
Hmm.
Yep, sure do. Love a show song, so I'm going to pick Nerma Daikon Brothers. Something that isn't even fucking cyberpunk.
What the fuck, Andy?
So that's my pitch. Nerma Daikon Brothers. It's a fucking 12 season musical anime that's never been done before and will never be done again.
Wait, so what are we gonna watch of it if it's
it's 12 episodes?
Okay, fair. Comedy, I thought you said 12 season, and I was like,
yeah, I heard that too.
Fuck, Andy.
Apologies.
Welcome to my 280 episode extravaganza.
We'll be here forever, motherfuckers.
So,
yeah,
Andy, I just watched the first couple of episodes of Review Starlight, and that's obviously looking at musicals. So this is about what? Is it about music or is it about other things, but done in a musical style?
It is about two brothers who own a daikon
to own a daikon
factory?
Not factory. Farm. Thank you.
Plant farm. Factory.
Farm. Who owns a daikon farm, and then they try and do stuff with daikons. There's an attractive lady who they are trying to be romantically interested with, and it invariably fails, and they always jump into show tunes.
I think you've explain you sort of what buried the lead here. It's a Watanabe one.
Wait, which? Shinji or Nabushin. Shinjiro?
Nabushin.
Shinji.
Oh. I like Nabushin. I like XL Saga. I like Wallflower.
I like that the music is by FAK. F star CK.
That's very much another very much of its era show, a mid-noughties comedy referenced, directed by him.
Yep, there you go. That's
Nabushin just goes to conferences now. I mean, I don't blame him, but or the conventions. It's a bummer. I wish he would direct again.
He even did a Lupin one back in 1999.
Yeah, and he like had a cameo of his like character with the huge fro and red jacket and blue shirt and yellow tie, which is I think a little bit of a Lupin riff. Anyway, interesting, Andy. You definitely failed to pitch a cyberpunk show.
Well, like, I never even...
A farming musical is the opposite of a cyberpunk show.
Like, what I said was using cyberpunk as an example, but what I'd actually like is one off your anime bingo list. And so you actually all completely ignored what I was asking for anyway and just did cyberpunk.
I should say the Wikipedia of Nermo Baiko... Daikon Brothers. The plot ends with Nerima Daikon Brothers features overt sexual gags, such as in the first episode where a male casting director fondles Ichiro's crotch as he sits there and moans.
What the fuck?
I don't even remember that. It's a weird thing. There you
okay.
go.
Okay. Fine.
Oh, that's right. So they've got
Jeff.
A Daikon
Jeff, save us.
All right, so I've also delved into the maybe problematic trash dump to find something that I think will be fun to talk about. Another Idle Thumbs adjacent podcast featured this show recently, directed by Tatsuya Yoshihara and made by Studio Lurch of Scum's Wish fame, another Keyframes canon.
Oh God! Really? You're right.
Shit. Monster Musume. This is problematic, trashy show that I think also has some gems in there. It's 12 episodes, came out in 2015. Sorry, the manga started in 2012. It's about a guy who a lazy government bureaucrat keeps housing up with different monster girls and their hijinks and drama and whatnot. And it's goofy. And
that's all.
And lots of sexy monster girls. It's interesting. Yeah. If you like that, Jeff, you should check out my Daily Life as a Centaur. Because that's like, because Monster Musume is sort of like where it feels like, that's where the world politics is now, where it's like, well, I don't know if this is incorrect or not, and I'm going to say it, and then I'm probably going to be blasted for it. And then my centaur is like, so everything is right with this world, and if you ever step out of line, then you're just going to be fucked, and there's some secret police that's watching over all of us to make sure we're all towing the line.
Yeah.
And it's like some weird dystopian, like, fantasy with hot monsters.
And when this came out, like, I just kind of dismissed it out of hand. It's like, oh, Japan.
I mean, it's based on a 2chan like comic series, right?
Mm-hmm. And like, but I also like I got into Dragon Maid, which is probably like a very comparable show, but like I really liked it, and I don't think that show exists without this show.
I'm not sure that's fair.
I think we'd be able to get like a fun conversation out of this if nothing else. I watched like the first four. No, I watched it over like a period of like a year and just kind of like was like, yeah. But like, I didn't really have much of an appreciation for it. But now I wonder if any of my like horrifying mutations over the year will have will get me to like drag anything else out of this show.
your new form will allow you to.
Okay, so let's quickly check something. Is your show somewhere we can actually watch it, Andy?
Fuck if I know.
Okay.
I didn't even remember watching.
Oh
one of
dear
it.
Me.
Right. it is. Yeah, sure. There's places that you can download things.
That's not what he means, you
it
asshole.
It's released in DVD in December 2006, and in 2008 it became one of the ADV titles transferred to Funimation Entertainment.
Okay, so it's sure. on Funimation somewhere. Hopefully.
Somewhere.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome
Musume is on Crunchyroll.
Nerima Daikon Brothers is, yes, it's on Crunchyroll. Nerima Daikon Brothers is not on, is not available, it looks like.
Well, there's a surprise.
Yeah, it used to be on Hulu. It's not on Hulu anymore when Funimation pulled it all off.
Yeah, it didn't.
You can buy the save edition of it for holy shit, $100? What the fuck?
That doesn't surprise me.
Jesus Christ.
Right. Let's do this.
This actually looks pretty good. I might go watch it on my own.
I think you might like it.
They also recommend Dragon Maid as like people who bought this also bought Dragon Maid.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Anyway.
So I've seen Monster Musume, and I think I've actually talked on it on this class. So I think, sadly, Jeff is going to have to miss out. Andy, his questionable watchability of show means that by sheer process of elimination, we're going to be watching Parasite Dolls, because it's the only one I haven't seen and the only one I can actually guarantee I'll be able to watch. Andy,
you can definitely watch it by means illegally.
No, not illegally. We are not. We do not condone illegal behavior on this podcast, Andrew.
And let's say this does look at least like there should. Whether or not we'll have anything good to say about this by the end, it does look like it could be fairly. It's like there's a lot of conversation going on at the moment because Cyberpunk 2077 is doing the rounds in all the big media games outlets and getting a lot of coverage about how it treats its particular version of a cyberpunk dystopia. And obviously Ghost in the Shell is one of the sort of founding shows of a lot of people's anime canons, and so it'll be interesting to watch something which is a bit more off to one side of the evolution of that particular genre and see how we think of it.
I'm really disappointed you didn't pick mine.
I mean, at the very worst, we can use it to talk about other adjacent works, the Bubblegum Crisis universe, Dirty Pair, all sorts of stuff, or just like shitty OVAs that we've watched in the past, like Bao or Dalos or something.
It's very much of its time, and it'll be interesting to watch it out of time.
I mean, I would almost say that it's actually kind of past its time even when it came through, because 2003 is well after the end of the 80s to mid 90s OVA boom. So,
what is it? Sorry, just repeat what we're watching.
We're watching Parasite Dolls. You will know it because it looks like Lady Gaga is turning into a robot on the front cover. She's like hugging herself and like half of her is metal, and she's got the Lady Gaga hair. So, yeah. Let's go ahead and call it there then. Make sure to watch Parasite Dolls and then join us 2 weeks from now for our next episode, where we will discuss it in addition to other stuff, including probably Overlord. And I don't know, maybe Jeff will have to defend Hanabato from John.
I don't need
having
to defend
heard this episode. And he's ready. He's pumped. So remember, rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Remember to send us email. We are at keyframespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter or on Facebook at Keyframes Podcast. And of course, tell a friend about the trashy cyberpunk anime you'll be watching for next episode. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.